Hello and welcome along to the Anxiety Specialist podcast. I'm your host, Michael Burrows.
And I'm Becky Burrows.
If you've been struggling with anxiety or know someone who has been, then this podcast is for you.
Today, we're going to be covering some more tips, strategies, and insights so you can get the anxiety-free life you deserve.
Ready? Let's dive in.
Today on the Anxiety Specialist podcast, we have Samara Lane, and she is an anxiety transcendence coach. And she helps people break free from fear and anxiety in their relationships and business through connection to soul. So thank you so much for joining us, Samara, for this meeting.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
Awesome. I'd really love to hear more about how you help people, what that looks like. What do you do?
Yeah. So for relationship anxiety specifically, and really all the work I do, I feel like I could say a lot of things to answer that question. So I think the easiest, like most condensed way I can say it is, really helping people transcend fear and anxiety through, first of all, awareness and really getting clear on what is really them and what is really the fear and the anxiety and the distortions, all the things that aren't really us. Like, we are not our mind, we are not our body. And then really help them reconnect to self-trust through connection to soul. For my clients, there tends to be a lot of inner child healing as well. Like, a lot of highly sensitive people and empaths are especially affected by anxiety. We experience things and feel
big.
So I don't consider myself like a trauma specialist, but it's very trauma informed. And we do a lot of that healing as well. It's been like, I had a happy childhood and there is so much healing that I still needed to do around all of that. So
No, that makes a lot of sense. Oh, it's really interesting getting together with another person who specializes in anxiety and hearing what you're saying, going, oh, yeah. Like, the awareness piece is so important. I remember when I was going through my journey with depression, one really helpful psychiatrist talked about being able to separate out, you know, that's the depression, that's the illness. Like, being able to separate what is you and what isn't is so important. But that awareness piece is huge. And I love how you're talking about highly sensitive people, because both Michael and I identify as highly sensitive as well. So I'm like, yep, get on that page. So that's really
awesome.
We
get it. Yeah.
Yeah. The highly sensitive people struggling with anxiety and wanting to help them to be able to live better lives without that getting in the way,
Exactly. Yeah. Because that's also, there's so many wonderful things about it. It's one of our superpowers, in my opinion. And my husband also, we've been married for 8 years now, 12 years a couple. And it wasn't until relatively in recent years where I'm like, honey, have you ever considered that maybe you're also highly sensitive? We realize we both totally are. It just expresses in ways. And we have a daughter. So who knows what she'll inherit of that. But
That's so interesting. Yeah. It's been a helpful piece, I think, to identify that side of things. And I'd love to hear, because one of the things that really attracted me to have you on the podcast is that you've really had a journey of your own going through relationship anxiety side of things. Would you be able to tell your story for us?
Absolutely. Thank you. So in hindsight, when I look back, I had anxious preoccupation in other relationships too, but it never manifested as big and overwhelming as it did when my partner proposed to me out of the blue.
Years
ago. So like, that alone was so triggering. And that was really the catalyst for me really having the experience. So to kind of share the story, paint the picture, we were at what was my birthday dinner. I thought it was my birthday dinner. Then he said some things. He's like, hey, he brought my present in a little wooden box. And hey, what's going to be some good places around here, maybe with a good view? And I'm like, oh my God, he's going to propose, but he doesn't know where. Oh no, what's happening? And this is different than I thought it would be. And oh my gosh. And I could tell how nervous he was. He was so sweet. And it was an amazing dinner, an amazing night, but he was just also so nervous and overthinking it. And I was like triggered. And I was like, I have to decide the rest of my life in this moment. Oh my gosh, I don't know. Like, I wanted to be with him, but this feels too much. How do I know if I'm making the right choice? Full on panic attack. When he did propose that night, I said yes. And obviously I've stuck with that choice. That felt like a good choice of me after healing my relationship anxiety. All good. And really, like, I had every desire to be with him and stay with him. But after saying yes, I was like, I need to go lay down. I think I'm dying. So we went home and the night ended.
I know that feeling.
Like, very panic attack territory. We ended the night just like crying together on the kitchen floor, and I like spilled all of these doubts and worries and started nitpicking him. I don't recommend doing this, and sharing all of his flaws, all the things that our relationship needed to work on. And for both of us, it was like not the proposal that anyone envisions or desires.
Not really, no. No, that's not quite how you would expect yourself to respond to that. And that must have been really hard, especially when we get it built up as this supposed to be this wonderful moment. And it is a lot of pressure to make a decision, especially if the guy's had a lot of thinking time about it and he's, you know, prepared himself for it. And then you maybe haven't done that yet. And then it's just like, oh, wow, okay, I feel on the spot.
Yes. And it's so funny because we hadn't talked about it much before, but I had thought about it and there was no reason in my mind when I thought about it previously not to like, yeah, why not get married? I wasn't even sure if I totally agreed with the institution of marriage, but on like a philosophical level kind of a thing. But I was like, yeah, we were having a great life and we both really saw that for each other and for ourselves and for our life. So then I started Googling because I felt really torn. There was this part of me that's like, I want to be with this person. I would love to dive in and marry them. I don't want to end this relationship. I would love for this to work and be our forever. And we have all the great things going. We'd moved in with each other recently before then. There's this other part of me that was so terrified and felt like, how could I possibly know if I'm making the right choice? And what if I choose wrong?
The certainty piece, I have to be certain about this to be able to move forward, which is
exactly
such a stumbling block with anxiety when you go, how do I have certainty on this? How do I know for certain? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it wants that certainty. It wants that control, even though it doesn't exist.
No, it doesn't.
So I ended up just Googling. I didn't know what else to do. Most people don't know that relationship anxiety even exists until they or someone they know starts frantically Googling about their symptoms and learns that it is a thing and they are not crazy. They are
that's
not
what
alone.
This is. Yeah. And there probably will be people listening to this podcast going, oh my gosh, it's me. That's me. Yeah. That's what I experienced. Yeah.
Yes. That was huge. I realized, this is a thing. It's so helpful. It's part of healing. Yeah, exactly. To just start to put a name to it and not feel alone or defective. And then through doing that, I started uncovering and unpacking. Really, I'd had anxiety my whole life. I just didn't know that that's what it was.
Yep.
So in hindsight, when I was a little girl, I would obsessively confess things to my mom that were honestly no big deal. But there was that mild OCD tendency of like, I must say everything. I must be a good little girl. Lots of reassurance seeking. I, again, highly sensitive. I cried really easily. And I just remember a lot of fear, like just a lot of fear as a kid. It kind of permeated everything. Social anxiety, didn't feel comfortable talking to people. And a lot of that, I mean, a lot of that is just being a kid, but it really stayed with me for a long time. And social anxiety is something that I've had to intentionally work through as a young adult and in my adulthood too.
Yeah.
And like, I didn't learn how to ride a bike till I was 12 because that was way too scary and risky. So like, you name it, lots of experiences like that. I think it really was wrapped up in like this low self-worth and low self-esteem. And it all kind of fed into this cycle of, you know, not feeling confident and then acting from a place of not feeling confident and being really fearful and then seeing quote unquote evidence that I don't like things aren't going the way I would have hoped or expect of myself and just really being hard on myself, a lot of perfectionism. As it kind of morphed, I then did the polar opposite and just started being like an out there kind of like, instead of the good little girl, I went into like, I'm a tough chick and I'm just wild and I let it all out. And that was me as a teenager and did a lot of self-destructive, self-sabotaging behaviors that again, without realizing it was all a coping mechanism. And I think a lot of us know someone who went through that or had some version of that. And I'm so grateful in hindsight for the experience of the relationship anxiety waking me up. Like being the survey to me really like doing this inner work and self-reflection around what I'd been dealing with my whole life, and that it wasn't something wrong with me. This is part of being a spiritual being, having a human experience on planet Earth. Doesn't have to define who we are. We're not our anxiety. We're not broken. We're on a disorder. And there's these parts of ourselves that really are asking and begging to be healed. And the only person who can do that is us.
Yeah. It's that funny thing I say about the best thing about having a serious mental health condition was these things that actually can be really great about it, and that you kind of suddenly are aware of, actually, I've been kind of like this a lot for a long time. And this is just that moment where it gets clear enough for me that I'm able to go, oh, actually, this is something I need to work on and change. And I think it's like you're saying, we all need that moment where we click to, this is something that actually we need to do something about, when it's just kind of running along and just under the surface, and it's making life hard, but it's not poking up enough that you can really identify what that thing, that niggle is. It actually can be quite a blessing to have that turning point, that moment where of identification. And it sounds like that was big for you. And talking about the relationship anxiety piece, when you're working with people, is part of that relation anxiety going, is this an anxiety, an indication that something is terribly wrong, like that worry? And how do you piece out this is the anxiety versus this isn't a relationship I should be in?
Such a good question. So such a good question, one that is one of the first people ask when they realize what might be going on or that they have relationship anxiety. And what I hear in that is like, what's a healthy doubt versus what is anxiety? And there are really clear distinctions. So a healthy doubt would be something like ongoing untrustworthiness or unfaithfulness, like not just one mistake and then it is repaired and people grow and learn. As a relationship coach as well, like putting on my relationship coach hat, there's a lot of things that relationships can actually grow from and doesn't have to be like the end of it. But if there's recurring, repeated, it's a pattern and they're not working on it, that's a serious concern. Untreated addiction of any kind, for sure. And any kind of abuse, right? So like serious emotional, verbal abuse, any amount of physical or sexual abuse, those would be highly concerning and things to take really seriously, of course. And then there's never an excuse for abuse. But as far as actually like the anxiety, how that is different, I mean, I talk about it. I'll say two things about this. First of all, there's like the two sides of the relationship anxiety coin. So for some people, it matters and shows itself a little differently than for others. One side of that coin is the I'm not enough story, which is easier to identify. Are they going to leave me? Are they cheating on me? Some version of that. And it's at least the one positive to that side of the relationship anxiety coin is it's a little more clear and obvious that, aha, I might have an insecurity going on, right? Even though it can be very deceptive, we can feel like, no, they're on their phone, they must be talking to someone or whatever. The other side of the relationship anxiety coin is much more insidious. It's a lot to tease out. It's the side that manifested for me and for a lot of my clients, which is the my partner's not enough side of the coin. Because it's a projection. Projections are tricky.
That's so interesting.
To expand on that, right? Like my partner, my relationship isn't enough sounds like, am I settling? Is this the right or wrong choice? How can I know for sure? It feels different, looks different than I thought I would. Am I not really attracted to them enough? Or do I not love them enough? Like I don't feel, or it doesn't seem the way I thought it would, or some version of that. There's lots of different versions that that can take. Another big one is like, is this my intuition telling me something, right? And I'm just ignoring it and I'm betraying myself and dishonoring my soul. That was huge, huge, huge for me. The truth is our soul doesn't do fear. That's not what it speaks. So the things to start teasing out there are like, actually, where is this really coming from, right? Like the intuition piece doesn't account for, but have you had any past negative relationship experiences? Have you had any trauma? Have you been exposed, like most of us have, to a lot of relationship myths where doubt means don't, and it should be like this moment and everything's perfect.
Yes,
so there's a lot to tease out there because that's not our intuition. And then how we know if it's relationship anxiety versus, again, a healthy doubt, how we know anxiety is at play. And again, not intuition, not soul, not a healthy doubt, is more like two things. One is, have we thought this before? Like, have we thought some version of this before? Like, we have these intrusive thoughts. Am I settling? Is this right or wrong? What do I do? We can ask ourselves and stop and ask ourselves, how many times has my mind thought some version of this? And has it ever found an answer that it stayed satisfied with? Like, that's $1 million question.
Because it might get an answer, but that doesn't necessarily take away that feeling of anxiety. And then it's like, oh, well, there must be something else then, even though I yes. haven't answered it. Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
It's or that emotional reasoning.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or we feel satisfied for a day or a week or a month, and then it comes back in some yeah. other form, or the exact same thing coming up again. And then we do compulsions, yeah. right? Compulsions are another sign. Rumination, reassurance seeking, Googling unnecessarily.
Google. Yep. I feel like that's been an interesting technological development for anxiety, is the ability to Google things.
Yes, yes. It can be helpful from an educational perspective, and then it can take a sharp turn into exacerbating the anxiety, can't it?
Yeah, it can. Yep. I think it's that line between a certain amount of information and then too much information, also information that may not be actually anything to do with what you're going through. That, especially that symptom check. It's like, I'm feeling this. It could mean that. And it's like, no, more likely it just means this. But yeah, Google.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
So when you identify it is the anxiety, that this isn't the relationship, this is something that you've potentially struggled with before in other relationships, and this is maybe more to do with anxiety than necessarily the health or whether the viability of the relationship, what's the next step once you figure that out?
Yeah. So once you've identified the relationship anxiety, the next piece is really getting curious and maybe even very courageously honest with yourself on, if the problem wasn't really the problem, if it wasn't really about your partner or relationship or fill in the blank, where might this really be stemming from? A lot of people I talk to, even when their first answer is, I have no idea. Once we talk about it more, there's always something. Do they have a predisposition to anxiety, or is it in their family? Anything like that? Have they ever struggled to trust themselves, right? Or struggled with self-esteem or self-worth or self-love, any version of that? Have they ever had a traumatic experience, big or small? What was their attachment style? Where did that lean growing up? We don't even necessarily need a formal diagnosis at all, but just what were our tendencies there? What maybe did we learn growing up when we were little? I've even had clients who are like, my childhood was so good, it couldn't have stemmed from that. But actually, I always compare all my relationships to my parents because their relationship is so perfect. So I feel like you can't really win there. Like there's so many ways that a highly sensitive person can experience and that we interpret things, relationship myths, right? And looking at that as a piece of awareness too, right? What did we learn from Hollywood, Disney, social media, culture? Like, what do we learn? We learn that doubt is acceptable when you're buying a car or choosing what to order for dinner, but you should never doubt your choice of partner.
Yeah. That's not actually a normal and healthy part of just negotiating relationship with people. Yeah.
Exactly.
And that people are people, you know, we're not being in relationship with this mythical, amazing soulmate who is perfect, where we're connecting with another human being and there'll be complications with that. And some things will work really well and some things will not work really well. And it's interesting, the guilty pleasure watching Indian Matchmaker on Netflix. And it's interesting how in other cultures, this idea of you meet someone and then you learn to love them and learn to create this relationship together. And there's been, you know, family involvement to make sure that the people are compatible and the families are compatible and that sort of thing. But on our side of things, we're so focused on meeting the right person and having this connection and ticking all of these boxes and kind of having that love. If we have the love first, then it'll always be there type thing. It's just interesting when we're coming up on a decade being married, myself and Michael, and it's work. Thank you. Thank you. It's work. You know, you go through different seasons and there's different challenges during that. We also run a business, so we're business partners as well. So there's all sorts of elements that go into our relationship, but yeah, there's a lot of working, negotiating, figuring things out. And I feel more than necessarily how compatible you are or those sort of things is how much you actually are willing to work through things and how, you know, how committed to the relationship and making that relationship work and that you're both on that has been really important to be able to have a relationship. But sometimes I know it has been that projection that there's this sort of perfect person that you're supposed to find that can lead to doubts about whether you've got or found that person can be quite challenging.
Exactly. Said that so beautifully and so perfectly. I mean, even not even just from an anxiety standpoint, but like from a relationship standpoint, there is no silver bullet or secret special algorithm that tells anyone who their partner is. You just get to choose whoever you choose, and that's your person. But that feels really scary and daunting. And the truth is, if you care about someone and you're willing to make it work, that's all the evidence we need to know. Like, right? It's really that simple. That is between a relationship that is existing and one that has ended is, are you willing to keep working on it?
Yeah. And that's a two-way street as well. The other person being willing to do the same. But if you both are, then it's amazing what you can go through even because of that. I'm really interested because it's clear from your story that you've been through this yourself. How did that lead into a business and helping other people? Like, what was that journey to get to where you are now, where you're actually helping people with something you've been through?
Yeah. So, and I love talking about the business side of things too, because that's also a place that my anxiety has popped up in a lot of the past as well. And it was separate. I wasn't one of those entrepreneurs that's like, oh my gosh, I found the magical step-by-step system to curing this. And now I'm going to patent it and sell it to the world. It was it was like, I had experienced relationship anxiety. I had gotten through it. I had made so much headway in healing there. And then I, years later, discovered like I wanted to do my next thing in my career. I didn't know what it was. And I was just describing to someone what I would love to do, like helping people and helping them work through things. And she was like, oh, like a life coach. And I was like, what is that?
Yeah.
And so that started my journey and did a certification. But I mean, really, we learn through doing and we learn through practice, right? And I, after a lot of resistance, realized that yes, like one of my mentors had said long before, our mess is our message. And so stop fighting it and just share the thing that has been most life-changing and impactful for you that you have moved through and know how to help other people move through. So
love that.
Ta-da.
Ta-da. Yeah.
Relationship anxiety coaching. It's funny because I kept oscillating between, do I want to be like a relationship coach? Do I want to be an anxiety coach? And I didn't realize like, yes. And yes, that is what you were doing.
Oh, I find it so fascinating talking to quite a few people now who are helping people with anxiety in some way or other, and how many of us, our journey has led us to this path, that the struggle, the suffering, the work that we put in leads into this purpose and this rewarding direction. And I find that really interesting because I know while I was going through my stuff, there was this frustration piece of why do I have to work on this? Why do I have to sort this out when other people don't have this problem?
Exactly. Yes. So true.
And then to see that all that work I have done, it wasn't just about me. It was also about all the people going forward that I would help. And it's really cool seeing that. Sounds like that's similar for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, because so many clients I've worked over the years had that same feeling of like, why do I have to deal with this? Other people don't have anxiety and they just get to enjoy their relationship or enjoy their life. And why me? And it can feel, there can be a lot of hopelessness there or just frustration and exhaustion, because being in a highly triggered state is really exhausting. And unlike other types of anxiety, with relationship anxiety, you're always exposed in a way because you are in the relationship at all times. You're not like, sometimes and sometimes not. And you're so right. It's really like, as they say, it's a dark night of the soul. And so it's very uncomfortable. What's helped me is to remember, like, we all have our things. Even if someone, their dark night wasn't anxiety, we're all human beings. We all are here and we're learning lessons and we're growing and evolving and coming back and remembering who we truly are, like on a spiritual level, is my belief system there. So maybe for someone else, it's not anxiety around the relationship, they are learning whatever they need to learn in their own way. We all have our stuff. And relationship anxiety was the greatest gift. Like how I show up as a partner and the amount of joy and satisfaction, gratitude and contentment I'm able to experience in a relationship, I genuinely don't believe were possible for me until I had moved through it. Unlike what the worst fear, so many people, the fear they have with it is, well, if I heal, will I discover that the truth is that I don't really want my partner anymore? And so far, literally, I have never once seen that happen.
Wow. That's pretty cool. That's very cool. Yeah. Like this is the thing with anxiety is it leads to so much avoidance and so much running away and escaping and trying to get away from the feeling. And if the feeling is in the relationship, how easy is it to just run? I know a few weeks into my relationship with Michael, I just had that, oh, maybe I've made a terrible decision. Maybe I shouldn't be with this guy. Like, maybe I should just book it, get out of this right now. And how many relationships that actually could potentially have been really great without working on that anxiety could we actually have escaped from? That actually could have worked out or been fine. And so great to get to that point where you recognize what it is and then you can actually enjoy that relationship and lean into it. And yeah, if people are in relationships as well, it's likely that they want connection. They want somebody to share life with and yes. So worth doing the work to be able to enjoy it. Anxiety sucks the joy out of things.
The opposite of joy, I would say. Oh. It's pretty much as far away as you can get almost. And yeah, you're absolutely true. A lot of people that I've worked with and just connected with over the years in my free groups too have shared like their breakup urges. I had a million breakup urges with this partner that we are now happily married and have a kid together and all that, but I didn't act on any of them, but it's so easy to, you know, definitely in hindsight, see how I definitely acted on lots of breakup urges in past relationships. And it's a common one, right? Well, I feel so much better now. And then we realize, aha, I'm in a new relationship with a different person. It's coming back. Oh, I but guess the feeling I'm the common denominator.
The feeling is exactly the same. Dang it. Yeah. Ah, oh, so true. So true. But so great. It's interesting what you said about how moving through it sounded like, and this is my experience of doing the anxiety work, is so often we want to get back to this normal. We have this idea of what normal is, maybe what a normal relationship is, what people normally feel in relationship, and we want to be able to achieve that. But doing this sort of work, leaning into the discomfort of anxiety, I found takes you further than you would go if you didn't do that work. And so where you think you're like, oh, I've recovered, and you're like, oh, anticlimactic, now I'm just like everyone else. It's like, well, no, because other people haven't had to lean into the sort of difficulty that you had and develop that resilience. And now actually you can do things that other people would potentially struggle with. How do you see that? Like you've mentioned that about your relationship. How do you see that in relationships when people do this work, how it actually impacts on the relationship as a whole?
I love that question. Yeah, it does make us so much more resilient. That's why I talk about a lot. Anxiety is our superpower, right? Like it's not there to stop us. It doesn't mean don't. It's there to shine a light on something that we need to work through. And it's almost for me on a spiritual level, it's a barometer of like, you've gotten away from like your truth or your soul and really we want to come back to like a neutral base point, right? A neutral middle ground with our nervous system. And then it's so much easier to reconnect with just authentically what is us. To answer your question, such a good question. How I've seen that is, for example, I've had clients who came for relationship anxiety and then really moved through that and then realized, aha, like now I'm buying a house and that's really big, right? That's a big life transition and can be really anxiety inducing. Even for someone who doesn't normally experience anxiety, she's like, wow, I can use all the same principles and techniques for relationship anxiety now and it works. And you're right, exposure and leaning into it, like sitting with the discomfort or allowing it in or leaning into that is so, so important. We're really taking back our power when we do that and not letting the anxiety run the show. And we're also reteaching ourselves, our brains, our nervous systems, everything, like I can do uncomfortable things and this passes. And the more I do it, even when it feels uncomfortable, the less uncomfortable it gets over time, right? It's really counterintuitive. So yeah, I love that.
It's the opposite of avoidance. It's the ability to lean in and to engage with life. And I feel that's really living. You know, when we're in that anxiety space, and especially when it's low enough level that it's not necessarily seriously impacting on our life, but it just means we avoid certain things that make us feel uncomfortable. I think it makes sense from the sense that our anxiety is there to keep us safe, to keep us, to protect us, and especially in a world before the modern technology where we were hunter-gatherers out, you know, and there was wild animals and different things that were very dangerous, you know, our anxiety would be trying to keep us alive. But we don't have so much of that. But it leads to avoiding anything that puts us in that uncomfortable state that isn't necessarily dangerous. It could be actually the best thing for us to move forward into that. And exactly. So when you get that ability to lean in, you actually get to experience life differently and live life rather than just avoid danger. Does that make sense?
Exactly. Then be in survival, because that's what the anxiety does, right? It's fight or flight. It's saying there is a perceived threat, real or imagined, usually imagined. And so I got to protect myself. And here's all of these complex, humans are so brilliant. It's almost like fascinating and brilliant how talented the brain is at coming up with these coping mechanisms. But when we come back to like, we are safe, right? And coming back to that higher wisdom of, I am safe. No one is coming at me with a spear right now. I get to do things that stretch me outside of my comfort zone. And by doing that, we're actually following what we really desire, even when it feels scary or stretchy. Everything opens up. Everything becomes possible. It takes a lot of courage.
Yeah. And that's what we call the mastery zone, is when you get to that mastery level of anxiety, you almost get this momentum in life because you're leaning forward, because you're moving forward. And it's amazing. It's amazing what comes up. I find to start with, you have a whole lot of decisions that you don't really want to. It's like when you hit one of those situations where there's no good answers, it feels like all the answers are not great. But when you have that ability to lean in and just choose something and move forward with that, then more and more opportunities start opening up. And that's where you start hitting the really great stuff. And I do feel like the journey of working through anxiety is actually like that superpower of being able to create this amazing momentum in your life where you can do things that you wouldn't have even imagined before leaning in. Like, I imagine you never imagined helping people with relationship anxiety before you actually had to lean into that space yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. I love everything you're saying and how you describe it. It's beautiful and so true. And I never wanted to be an entrepreneur. That was way too risky for my risk adverse safety Sam mentality that I had.
Me too.
And so then a lot of people who are in that space are like, if we have a predisposition to any kind of anxiety, are like, oh, I'm scared to start my business, but I want to start my business, but I'm scared of myself out there. And it feels like this tug of war. Same thing, like this is the nature of it, right? Want to be in this relationship, scared to be in this relationship, want to dare to do this. And so we can feel really torn. And you're right. It's just starting by just go for it. Like, just do something, just make some movement, lean in, move through it. You can do this. And as all your listeners know, it's so much easier to do when we don't feel alone, when there are people that are lifting us up, reminding us how to give ourselves compassion. And there's nothing wrong with us. This is a very widely held experience. If anything, it's a growing experience in this world of like mental health disorders and millions of people with anxiety and all of this. And it's also, in my opinion, it is optional, and not from the sense of like, oh, you just can choose to not be a highly sensitive person anymore and just get over it. Like, not like that, but more like we get to decide how we respond to the fear, the anxiety. And that's going to be the biggest determining factor in where we move, like how we move out of it or whether we stay in it.
Whether we stay in it. Yeah. We talk about the person who's in the stress zone where the anxiety is really intense and they're struggling with it, but they aren't making that choice to do something about it. They're not looking for a solution. And if someone's in that space, there's nothing, like, you can be the best anxiety coach in the world and there's nothing you can do about it because it is really in their hands whether they, but once we call it the decider zone, when you move into that next stage, where you've made a decision, you've reached that point where you're like, yeah, this is an issue and I need to do something about it. And you actually start moving forward, getting the help you need. That's where life starts really taking off and changing. Yeah, I think that's where you start. And it's that little step, and it could be just reaching out to a coach or a therapist and saying, you know, I want to see someone to get help with this and start moving forward, and then getting those tools and strategies. And really is that little steps at a time. And it's not like one day you're really struggling with anxiety and then you just decide the next day you're not going to. It's those little steps to move in a direction that's going to see improvement.
Spot on, precisely. Yeah, all of my biggest transformations happened after I had one of my lowest lows. And that was the push I needed to get the help.
Damn it. I hate that. Oh, I like, like, yes. And like that, because I hate that. Oh, it's just because those with anxiety, you have these like these really big, hard moments like that. Like the proposal for you, we just recently had, we're doing a development, we're building on the back of our property. And we just had a quote come through that was just way beyond what we expected price wise. And it's those massive moments where you just like, just the adrenaline hits and you're just like, oh my gosh, feel like I'm dying. How do I work through this? But yeah, it's those moments, if we lean into it, if we make that choice to do the work, that can lead to the best growth and changes. And yeah, I wish it wasn't. I wish it was just like easy, small things that lead to the great, great stuff.
That would be so nice. Yes, that would be so much more pleasant, you know, and the more like that zone of mastery, the more we do this work, the more we realize actually the things that we used to think were really hard or experience as really hard. It's okay if things feel hard. That's totally a valid experience. No need to invalidate that. It's okay to feel that way. And we also get to tune back in. Like a part of my journey has been rediscovering that I actually get to decide how easy or hard things get to be, like anything. Like the other day, me and my 4-year-old daughter were doing a hike, and we're a little ambitious. Yeah. We've been off more than we probably should have chewed. So I carried her a lot of the way back and it was fine, but she did amazing. And there were just all these times on the way back up the hill where she was feeling like, you know, I'm tired. I can't, it's taking forever, being a 4-year-old. So I said, partly for myself, partly for her, was like, you know what helps me? Is just saying out loud, this is fun. This is easy. Yeah. I can do this. And that became our little chant. And we chanted up whenever we needed to up the mountain. It became our little mantra. Now when it's like, I don't want to put on the underwear, it's like, this is fun. This is easy. I can do this.
Yeah.
Comes this fun thing. We have so much influence over our experience of life. So a part of this gets to be when we get to that level, I believe there can be some dark nights before we can get to the space of letting life be easy, letting life be fun, letting it be more simple, letting it be more of a flow. The less we grasp and resist, right? The more we allow and accept and lean in, the easier it feels.
Yeah. Oh, that's hard. That's a hard piece. That's a hard piece. It's this hard thing with which I've experienced with anxiety is the propensity to think that it's the external things that determine our internal. So this thing is happening. And so I'm going to feel this way, or I need to get rid of this external situation. I need to leave this job, this relationship to be okay, because that's the problem. And then when you realize it's more of an internal thing, that actually all these things can happen externally, but how we are internally isn't a direct, like, it's, you can be at peace and calm in a storm. You know, it's a responsibility piece, I think, is that actually I need to take ownership of my internal world rather than just blame my internal world on external things. And in doing so, really give up my power over the situation. And it's like, do you want to be out of control, or do you want to take some responsibility? And that's a big.
Very well said. Yeah. As the saying goes, life never gets easier. You just get better. We just learn through it and we practice and we work. But it really does start with that first baby step. It really does start with self-compassion. And even to this day, if I'm feeling any amount of like that little bit of tension in my body, any amount of anxiety coming up, it is what I come back to is there's a mindset piece for sure. There's how I'm responding to it. But so much of it still for me is how am I treating that scared little aspect of myself that really does think something is bad or she did something wrong or fill in the blank, whatever it is. And so that self-compassion piece, that healing piece, I think we can't talk about it enough. It's just been
so often, I know for myself, I've had this unhelpful belief that if I just beat myself into doing it, if I beat myself up about it, kind of tell myself why I'm doing it wrong and like how I'm not good enough, that somehow that will motivate me to be better. It's
just, you'd think.
It's not the case.
One way.
We do so much better with compassion. And I guess I've worried in the past that if I'm kind to myself, then I'll just be like, I'm sweet, I'm not going to do anything, you know?
Yeah.
When actually it's like, actually that compassion helps me to be able to do the hard things.
Yeah.
Helps me to lean into. Because there is that interesting, that piece you said before, of people going, what if I've made the wrong choice? What if I made a mistake? Leaning in self-compassion gives us permission to make the mistakes, to maybe get it wrong. Because there isn't this magical certainty we can get to. And so stepping out is stepping into uncertainty. But it's interesting how once we start doing that, then you know, it's easier to correct a ship when it's moving. You know, when something's still, it's really hard to change direction. But when you start moving, then when things aren't quite going the right way, you can redirect and you can work on things.
Exactly.
But, self-compassion piece keeps coming up.
Yes. Yes. I was going to say, you can't steer a parked car. Exactly.
No, you can't.
But that self-compassion piece, you're right. I think that's kind of the old traditional way of motivating ourselves and others is like, here's the kick in the pants you need. And I'm all for that at times if it feels aligned and actually resonates and feels helpful to someone. But yeah, I just have never met someone who struggles with anxiety who there isn't also some level of this perfectionistic piece and just being hard on themselves. I think even people without anxiety struggle with this across the world.
I feel like it's especially highly sensitive people with anxiety. Generally, you can say you're being too hard on yourself and hit the nail on the head, you know, and say actually you can kind of take a step back, give yourself some self-compassion, and then take that little step forward that's going to be get you going in the direction that's going to make all the difference. Thank you so much. This has been really great. And I love that we're ending on that self-compassion. And this is not the first time that this has come up. And I wonder if it's what I need to keep hearing at the moment. It's that funny thing of like those things that come to you are often the things that you need to keep working on. And I frequently bring this up with our audience around self-compassion, about being kinder to ourselves, especially with depression. I think beating ourselves up can be that shovel that just digs us deeper and deeper. And taking those small steps is really that ladder that starts climbing us out. And so I love ending with that. There's one thing you can do today is be kinder to yourself. Give yourself a moment and give yourself some kindness.
I love that so much.
Yeah. Well, we'll finish up there. Thank you so much, Samara, for joining me for this and for sharing your expertise and giving us some insight into relationship anxiety. Like you said, I think sometimes we need to hear about these things to finally click that there might be something that we've been struggling with. Then we can take those steps to do something about it. So I thank you so much for this. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
And just before we go, if people want to connect with you further and work with you, what are your best modes of interaction, connection, socials, that sort of thing?
Yes, I'm on Facebook. You can find me there, Samara Lane. I have a free Facebook group there, or you can just find me directly, samaralane.com.
Awesome. Well, check out Samara and her group and her things on socials. And again, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for listening to the Anxiety Specialist podcast. That's it for this week's episode. If you found this episode helpful, make sure to click the follow button and please do share this with your family and friends. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook or Instagram. That's at Anxiety Specialists. And if you're interested to learn how you can live an anxiety-free life, you can get our epic Anxiety Reducer Guide absolutely free, so you can get started right away on getting your anxiety back down. Just grab the link in the show notes. Feel free to message us and let us know what you'd like to learn next. I am your host, Michael Burrows.
And I'm Becky Burrows.
And we're going to be back next week with more tips, strategies, and insights so you can get the anxiety-free life you deserve.